Joining me in the KRVS studio this afternoon is Dr. Pearson Cross. He is associate professor and head of the Department of Political Science, and he will be giving the 2013 Gloria Fiera Lecture this year. He'll be giving it on Thursday at 11 o'clock in Angel Hall Auditorium. And the topic, the lecture is called Will the Humanities Survive? The Effects of Charter Schools and Vouchers on Louisiana Education and the Humanities. And Pearson, before we start talking about the particular topic, many of our listeners may not know Gloria Fiera. It's been a while since she's been here at the university. She really started the humanities program here at the university. She was an art historian and really believed in that collaborative field of study that merged art and history and English and many others. And out of her work came the Friends of the Humanities, who sponsor this lecture every year. So maybe we should start off talking about what the humanities are, other than just names on a curriculum, English, history. Maybe give people a sense of what that means, since we are talking about the survival of the humanities.
You know, and I would have to say I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me. And I think this is a worthy topic and a worthy lecture series. And so it's a wonderful thing to be invited to do it. And I'm deeply honored. With that said, I'm thinking what a wonderful legacy for Gloria Fiera to leave behind. We should all leave behind a legacy like this that focuses on the things that are important and that creates a structure that follows you after you've moved on, and you know, promotes this kind of lifelong learning and the good of Acadiana and UL citizens. So this is just really wonderful.
And you know, when you talk about the organization and the legacy she's left, just in talking about the humanities and what it encompasses, I do just want to mention that I had the pleasure recently of attending the Friends of the Humanities luncheon, their annual luncheon, and it was such a joy to see the number of people who were there, actively involved in studying the humanities, experiencing the humanities, and just celebrating the humanities. And I know that they are an open group, and they welcome anyone with an interest in the humanities. And so just to jog
people
through.
Yeah, let's say what the humanities are. Essentially, the humanities are the are an answer to the question. Joan Steer told me this. She said, you know, Pearson, the humanities really are, what does it mean to be human? And what are the disciplines that study what it means to be human? And what are those? And we would say, well, arts, dance, theater, literature, linguistics, religious studies, of course, history, history of art, history of nearly everything, you know, is kind of our mutual record together, modern languages and philosophy, and some of the social sciences too. You know, some people may say, well, why is Pearson Cross delivering a lecture on the humanities, given that he's a political scientist, and the humanities aren't really, it's kind of an outlier field, but still in political science, we consider those fundamental questions about human life. What's the good life? What's the best life? What are the mixtures? If you go back and read Plato, for example, something that's central to the Western canon, those are the, how should society be structured in a way to bring the, you know, the utmost good to the society and to each citizen. And those are the kind of questions that the humanities are deeply, deeply involved in.
Right. And I guess if you go back a little ways, 100, 200 years, we didn't categorize fields of study quite so minutely as we do today. And when you talk about Plato writing on politics and, I mean, any number of great thinkers, writers, people we might think of as people in literature wrote on politics and wrote about the political social life.
Yeah, the modern university and the way we do everything is really a, you know, 1860s on kind of a thing. You know, when Harvard was founded, it was founded as a college to prepare young ministers for the ministry, you know, to promote godly education and so on. And it's, and then with the Morrill Act in 1862, things kind of changed. And but we're really all in a bit of a silo, aren't we? You know, we're all like burrowed down in deeply into, you know, it's a mature disciplines now when you talk about English or political science or sociology or anthropology. Each one of those are, you know, each one of those has their own kind of guiding stars, their icons. And so we're all burrowed deeply down into those silos trying to, you know, get that next breakthrough in research or that next wave or that new understanding or whatever. So the commonality between all of our pursuits is sometimes lost. And I think it's interesting to bring it back, and particularly in times of challenge, because humanities are challenged right now. It's interesting to bring it back and say, no, really, what holds us together and why are we doing this?
Right, and our ability to talk about it, to express ourselves, and bring everyone into the room and not just have those silos, as you said, that people come together and can talk about architecture equally with the political life and see how one affects the other. That's very, very important. Again, if you are just tuning in, my guest, Dr. Pearson Cross, Associate Professor and Head of the Department of Political Science, will give the annual Gloria Fiero lecture that is sponsored by the UL Lafayette Friends of the Humanities. And the title of his talk is The Effects of Charter Schools and Vouchers on Louisiana Education and Humanities. And this is not a topic that you just pulled out of the air, because you have been very involved in writing a book about education reform in Louisiana.
That's right, and I have. I've been collecting materials ever since the 2012 legislative session, of course, and recently have gotten together some treatment of the book that I have a co-writer, and he's working the capital angle, the halls of the legislature angle, and I'm kind of working the policy angle and the think tanks and some of those things. And education reform in 2012 in Louisiana was groundbreaking. Governor Jindal had HB 1 and HB 2, and those were enormous and enormously complicated and enormously important bills that he pushed through the legislature in a really kind of a blitzkrieg of legislative derring do, so to speak, that we're still kind of reeling from and sorting out the effects, you know. But it was so interesting and different, and such a departure from public education in Louisiana prior to that, that I thought it was very important that somebody study it, study where it's coming from, talk about the traditions it works in, kind of place it within the context of the conservative movement, kind of look at education and see what is this going to do to education, where is education in Louisiana, and all those kinds of things. Because this is really groundbreaking. Now, since the governor's passed all this stuff, of course, much of it's ended up in court, and there have been back and forths between a lot of different institutions and individuals trying to sort out the effects, the funding, the interaction with the MFP, the Common Core's coming in, and civil rights issues in terms of desegregation and all that. So it's not it's a very complicated legacy right now, and it's still an evolution, but it's an enormously important kind of initiative by the governor, and it's enormously important that people, scholars, take a look at this and try to sort it out and figure out, you know, what's best for Louisiana and how will this affect education? Is education threatened? Will it be enhanced? Is this something we've needed? Is this something we should avoid? And all those sorts of things.
Thank goodness for scholars is all I can say, because I don't know anyone except maybe a couple journalist friends who actually read everything in those bills. And in addition to reading everything in the bills, what you're talking about is going back and doing research on the history of it, because we do forget very quickly the history of whatever field we're talking about, education.
Right.
And that is the work you do in the humanities, go back and study. So where is that? How did you start unearthing what education was like in Louisiana to get a sense of why this was so different?
Well, education has been very challenged in Louisiana, you know, and we've had public education here, although we've had some severe setbacks. You know, we're one of the few states in the United States history where literacy has actually taken steps backwards. There were some budget cuts in the early, you know, 20th century that, in fact, measures of literacy declined in Louisiana, you know. But so we've always been kind of lagging behind in terms of education. We have a large population in poverty. We have problems with access to just health care, food, and all those other things, much less good education. But the move to reform education comes out of a very particular way of looking at education and looking at public education as an unforgiving, inflexible, bureaucratic monopoly and monolith. And so the governor's reform agenda comes out of a critique of public education, not just here but everywhere, that basically says that we want to start putting parents in control of their children's education. They're not being served by the system as it currently is. Hence, how do we do that? How do we allow, in other words, how do we allow poor parents – to have the same advantages that rich parents do. Where do rich parents send their kids? Well, they send them wherever they want. Where do poor parents send their kids? Well, where the bureaucrat in the parish office assigns them, right? So Bobby Jindal, you know, to his credit, has said, we want to fix that. Now, of course, Bobby Jindal has other kinds of targets, like government targets and bureaucracies and things that he would like to break down. But that's really the dynamic that it springs out of privatization, out of increased consumer choice, out of competition, out of those sorts of things. So when you look at vouchers, when you look at charter schools, what you're really seeing is part of the conservative movement to take back public education from the bureaucrats and the state bureaucracy and the national bureaucracy and try to put it back in the hands of those people closest to it, the parents and so on. Of course, that's the good spin on it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting to hear you talk about issues in the early 20th century. You know, sometimes we think problems only arise in our time. We don't think of the history and the patterns that occurred long before. And so that's just in itself. Your work as a scholar has made us aware of something that maybe we didn't remember or never knew about Louisiana. Now, the topic of your talk is very specifically about the effects of those charter schools and vouchers that you mentioned are part of this this revolution. And you're studying the effect of Louisiana on Louisiana education and the humanities. So sometimes, again, we think of education as very narrow, and you're bringing it into a much larger picture, this idea of the fully knowledgeable person. So tell us about that.
Well, to make a long story short, the effect of charters and vouchers on humanities education in Louisiana right now is marginal. There is not an enormous effect. It's not clear in the future, you know, if we start to really privatize our system and start to move lots and lots of people off the MFP public school formula into private schools, into charter schools and other places. It's not clear at that point what the actual effect is going to be on the study of the humanities, meaning, of course, arts, music, dance, literature, religious studies, classics, modern languages, and those sorts of things. And in fact, the evidence seems to suggest from charter schools that, in particular, that many charter schools are started up to study the humanities. So it's not an exclusively STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math focus in the charter schools or in the programs where students use vouchers to go to schools. So right now it appears to cut both ways because there are some parents who say, I want Johnny to take art and he's not getting it in the public school. I'm going to put him in a school where we do get art or where we do get music or where we do get religious studies or things like that. So it's entirely unclear. What we should note is that right now there are about 8,000 students in Louisiana that are in voucher programs, costing the state roughly $40 million this year, which is not coming out of the MFP or the public pot of money, which because of some complicated court issues reverted back to the previous MFP, not the current year's MFP. And then in terms of charter schools are big in some areas and not big. Here we just rebuffed the applicants of charter schools to open 5 here in Lafayette Parish. Now that's been kicked up to the BESSE Board, the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, and they're going to have to decide. In some areas, charters have been very successful, although with all due reference to John White, our superintendent of education, not quite as successful as he's saying. But in New Orleans, 90% of the students in New Orleans that aren't in private school are going to some sort of state-supported charter school. Let me just say about charter schools. Charter schools are publicly funded private schools. So what you do is you get a chartering group, usually contains teachers or could be a corporation. UL Lafayette could sponsor it, a corporation, Stellar Jewelry, if they wanted, could have a charter school. Start it up, and if you get students to go there, then you get those state dollars per student to run your school. You have to test the students in the charter schools and so on. So charter schools are really a public-private hybrid. Vouchers are entirely different. Vouchers are kind of like an educational voucher that the state gives to a parent to spend at whatever educational outlet that they want to. And typically about 85% of all vouchers are used in parochial schools and religious schools across the country. And there are strong voucher programs in Louisiana and Ohio and a few other places.
Mm-hmm. My guest, Dr. Pearson Cross, head of the Department of Political Science, here talking about his lecture that he will give on Thursday in Angel Hall on the UL campus. It is the annual Gloria Fiera lecture. Now, when you're talking about these schools, they've had a very recent history in Louisiana, and the topic of your lecture is the effects of charter schools and vouchers. And so how much are you using history? How much are you conjecturing? How are you trying to shape your understanding of the effect of these occurrences?
In terms of my talk today, mm-hmm. is that what you're referring to?
On Thursday.
Yeah. What I'm really doing more is talking about the threat to the humanities in mm-hmm. general. Mm-hmm. So I've picked up the, the poster has "Will the Humanities Survive?" And I've kind of picked that up. And mm-hmm. and really, quite frankly, there are two main threats to the humanities today. And that is that, one, we are very, very insecure about America's position in the world. And we have a real sense that we're falling behind and that our students aren't as bright and they're not getting degrees in math and science and they're not going to be able to compete and so on. And as a result, state governments and federal governments and everybody else has been running around like a chicken with their head cut off talking about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and promoting STEM, promoting, and throwing money at STEM. Barack Obama just signed something granting $3.1 billion more to STEM funding to try to meet that deficit. So that's on one side a problem. When you devote funding and attention to the STEM agenda, you are not – that is not the humanities area. That doesn't talk about the human experience. That doesn't necessarily build critical reasoning skills. That doesn't talk about the virtues of diversity. That doesn't encourage students to be differential learners. That doesn't do a lot of things.
Certainly wouldn't please George Santayana with the
– Doesn't celebrate our tradition and culture.
Yeah.
The second major threat to humanities education is the lack – the changing in funding. We're all, with the downturn 2007, 2008, state funding to education has really taken a huge hit. And we've seen that here in higher ed where the funding formula's flipped. We were 65% state funded. Now we're 35% and going down. And our funding that is coming to us is not protected at all. It doesn't even come out of the general fund anymore. It consists of the sweepings from the different funds that have excess dollars in it, collection from tax scofflies and other kinds of things. So we are not we're not doing so well. So as money gets tighter, programs feel more and more compelled to justify their existence. Right now, the climate is it's easier to justify your existence if you teach students engineering because the assumption is there'll be a job there. Well, some of the figures that I'll trot out at the talk on Thursday show that, in fact, that is a misplaced understanding of the jobs. First of all, we got more STEM graduates than we need. Secondly, most jobs that are opening aren't for STEM graduates. Thirdly, graduates in the humanities are much more likely to develop the critical thinking skills and the kind of things that employers are actually looking for. One very revealing statistic to me is that graduates in the humanities score better on the GMAT, the General Management Graduate School exam, than do graduates of college business programs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does that say to you there?
That's right. And so those are some of the statistics you will be talking about
Absolutely.
On Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when I threw out George Santayana, he is the one who said those who do not remember history are, condemned to repeat it. That idea that if we don't study it, we don't have people who are studying it, and engineers mm-hmm. or other scientists who are not studying and understanding the history of the country. So, very, very important.
And speaking of the history of the country, if I can just tie it into one of the things about the humanities program, and of course political science, is our shared civic, our traditions and our political traditions, and a sense of who we are and how we got here as a people and what America is all about. I'm devoted all the time to the idea of civic learning, of building citizens. I see my role as a political science teacher, in part to make my students, the people that come in contact with me, more conscious of their role as a citizen in our society. So in that sense, these humanities is all about that. It's all about who we are, where we've come from, what is our shared responsibility, what is our mission, what have we done right in the past, what have we been about. An informed citizen able to make the kind of decisions that can, in fact, guide the republic. You see these wild claims on Facebook about this or that or, on the internet. And anyone who's sat in a reasonable American government class or learned something about their country knows those things aren't true.
Hmm.
Right? It's so easy to make things up when people don't have access to just the facts, And so that's an important part of this as well, I think.
Right. And I do have to say I've encountered a number of your students on campus for various reasons, at functions, coming through here, helping us, coming for interviews, and they are remarkably well-schooled and already extremely involved in the community and believe that that's important.
That's the best thing. You know, if nothing else, ideology aside, anything else, if you walk away and at the end of the day your students are much more likely to participate in politics and to be concerned citizens, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that gets the program the A+. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's about to me. Because the other things, the knowledge, all that stuff, they can get on their own. If you can spark that interest, it can get them involved in the process. That's really what it's all about. And we try to do that very hard, by the way, in the political science department here at UO.
Well, it's showing. Again, every student I've encountered from that discipline, and whether their interest is going into public service or law school or whatever field, they all have that sense of the importance of being well-read, well-educated, understanding our common values.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I think that's great to hear.
And I am talking with Professor Pearson Cross. He is head of the Department of Political Science here at UL Lafayette, an associate professor in that department, and works with many, many students here on campus. He is being honored this year by being asked to give the Gloria Fierro Lecture. That will be this Thursday, October 17th at 11 at Angel Hall Auditorium. The Friends of the Humanities here at UL Lafayette, they've been around since the 80s, sponsor this lecture. They believe in the humanities and they believe in sharing them with the greater community. They take a lot of classes here at the university themselves and support some programs here at the university, but they also want to share that with the community, and so they offer this lecture series every year. So you mentioned your book that you are working on. Is that coming out anytime soon, Pearson?
Well, I didn't get as much done as I was hoping to this
summer.
Been working
on this lecture.
Well, yeah, no, not really. Other things, other writing assignments that I'm trying to wrap, that I've wrapped up now. And so now, but now, of course, classes are underway and all those mm-hmm. sorts of things. You know, I was just going to say, I was looking back over the list of previous givers of the lecture, and it's all very interesting to me. And of course, seeing their topics and so on. But I have to say, I'm a little bit chagrined at following last year's lecture, which was given by a 6-piece jazz band.
Now, you're a musician yourself,
that's
too.
That's right. You know, but it's hard. You know, I'm thinking about this. They say, you know, never follow a dog act or a child act. But, you know, here I'm going to walk up with my PowerPoint and my lecture and thinking last year they were tapping their foot and listening to some Charlie Parker tune, you know.
Well,
and
Pearson,
it's just not fair.
You know, you remember Tom Lear from the 60s.
Absolutely.
Maybe you could become a modern Tom Lear, you know, for the 2000 teens.
Well, you know, it was mentioned to me that there is a grand piano on stage. So, you know, it started me thinking.
Because he's saying about politics. He's
saying
about
that's right.
Social studies.
So I was so maybe I could change it into kind of a musical presentation.
Absolutely.
But I'm not sure we're going to go that way. We'll see.
Well, when you have more time, maybe
yeah,
you
maybe
do that.
So.
Absolutely. But that is interesting, thinking back to him being a musician and tackling so many of the topics of the day that he did back then. Well, I wouldn't worry about it. I'm sure it was a great performance last year, but your topic is extremely timely. And is there a time for question and answer at this lecture?
I believe there is at mm-hmm. the end. I'm not going to talk that long. Mm-hmm. I think 25-30 minutes max, and then that usually wears out my voice, and then we'll be ready for questions. And of course the audience is going to be students and also Friends of the Humanities and other you know, people from around the community and the university. And so I expect a spirited question and answer session, and I think that'll be it. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. Well, that is this Thursday, 11 o'clock, and it's in Angel Hall. So there's parking sort of cat a corner. There's a pay lot across the street, Jorah Park Drive mm-hmm. in St. Mary, and you can park in there and walk on over to the lecture in Angel Hall.
And then the parking garage may have some spots.
They may
too.
Have some spots as yeah. well. So lots of opportunity to park. And, of course, if you're on campus, you can certainly just walk on over there. But take an early lunch and listen to this great lecture, again, sponsored by the Friends of the Humanities at UL Lafayette. This is the annual Gloria Fierro Lecture, this year given by my guest, Dr. Pearson Cross, head of the Department of Political Science. Well, thanks, Pearson, and hopefully we'll have you back when your book is published.
I certainly hope so.
Thanks.
Thank you.